Hey, 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 guys. Welcome to Building This Community.
This is your city business and policy development podcast. We're your hosts,
Luke Patrick
and Andrew Klump. Welcome to this week's episode of Building This Community. Our guest today is Jonathan Blue, who is the chairman and managing director of Blue Equity. Jonathan, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your current position, maybe a little bit of the history of Blue Equity?
Yeah, it was, basically forged from a family business sale in 1998. And we've been doing a lot of investing in the region and have grown, you know, even internationally since then. And we're probably now easily the leading and most active firm in the area. As far as our investments, I'll call it later stage private equity, later stage buyout of companies. And also we've been very successful at rolling up businesses and either holding them or eventually selling them.
Well, I guess one thing that we were curious about, and if this is some kind of trade or family secret, you know, I won't push it too hard, but what kind of process do you guys engage in when you're vetting possible investment candidates?
Yeah, sure. You know, we're really rarely asked that, but we have a pretty strict guideline. I mean, we don't do pre-revenue businesses. We don't do startups. We don't do restaurants. We don't do very, very high tech. It's really traditional businesses. Now, the exits may be different, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But to start out, we try to be simple and find traditional businesses in the region that fit a model where we can scale them very quickly.
So are there any specific indicators that would steer you away from a business? Anything that really keeps you guys from investing?
Again, I mean, I'm not a tech expert and I'm not that smart. So, I'll leave that to the really smart people in other regions of the country. But we're just all about execution and trying to do the best we can to find a business that needs an infusion either of capital, talent, back office, administrative, turbocharging that process. They may be weak in that area. We like to add value in bringing all those to the table and then trying to grow a business to another stratosphere, which we've done time and time again.
And one last thing I want to hit on. You mentioned something about kind of local or regional. Do you find a drive to invest in things that are closer to home, or are you well diversified across like regional, national, even international markets?
Well diversified now. It's actually a preference to start locally because, you know, obviously we're based there. But again, we usually end up extending out either within the state or the, you know, call it the Ohio Valley region. And then we've even done it internationally before. So it really just depends. But it's always nice when something's in your backyard and you can add to the employment base in our state as well as grow with the region.
So we kind of wanted to pick your brain as well about the moves that cities make with their own funds. Do you think it is smarter for cities to kind of focus on growing locally owned kind of legacy businesses, or should they focus more on scaling startups within their community?
I actually have a third answer that you may not like, but I'm not political. I think are we talking about Louisville specifically, Kentucky, or just a general question?
We're asking about cities generally.
Listen, not political, I think we don't do enough trying to do that and reach out to other regions and bring talent in. I think we do too much, or attempt to do, again, not being political here, too much fertilization of local companies, and they end up flopping out. We need to go get the best of the best in other regions and seed them and bring them in. And I don't think we do that at all. I think we're very weak in that area. And I think that's what other cities are doing, like Miami, Atlanta, you know, forget Silicon Valley. They've been doing it for 20 years. But the newer cities that are now doing it, Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, I mean, they are really passing us by. And that's what needs to be done. That's the missing piece that we haven't done. We focus too much on trying to build internally, and we've missed out on bringing talent in from the outside.
So with that, is there like a specific policy that the city could do to kind of strengthen the startup community, you know, to try and attract additional businesses here? Like, is there something that would make you want to like locate a business here?
I mean, I didn't have the questions ahead of time, obviously, which is great, but I just right off the top of my head, I think we need the banks to be involved, we need funds to be involved, and we need to basically have a search team and a search fund that brings in that talent and those companies from outside and tries to relocate them to our region, wherever it is. It doesn't have to be Louisville. It could be Lexington. Northern Kentucky's booming. Owensboro's booming. All of the other cities in the state are booming. And I think if we somehow had coordinated the leadership, which we don't have, and we got our resources together with the brilliant people in the business community, we could do a much better job of recruiting. But we just don't do it. And we try to raise these funds locally and say, okay, now we're going to do this angel fund, or now we're going to do this startup fund. And when have you heard the last time one of those startup funds invested in a company that became a Fortune 500 or even a S&P 500 company? It hasn't mm-hmm. happened. And so that's a failed, wasted effort, in my opinion. You're asking me, so I'm as candid as I am.
No, we certainly appreciate it. And I think that's something. Cincinnati has some paired funds with Boston, and there's a lot of outreach that you can do with other cities. What do you think, how does operating in a mid-sized city like Louisville impact your business? Is there pros and cons to working in a more of a mid-sized city versus a larger city like a New York or an Atlanta or LA?
The youth, which is not me, they want, entertainment. They want nightlife. They want professional sports teams. They want places to go. They want entertainment districts. The cities around our region have done some of that, but we are still behind, and we've now fallen way behind because of, some of the things that have happened in some of our urban areas over the last 12 to 18 months. We were on a great stride and streak, and it's now dissipated. And so that's what people are looking for that I've seen around the country to complement their lifestyles. And, nobody has to have a beach every weekend. That's just not practical in some cities. But those kind of things that I mentioned a few minutes ago, those are what people are looking for now to complement their lifestyles and their business lives.
Well, being a company that, I mean, honestly, first, Andrew and I talk all the time about increasing amenities to try and drive young workers and new workers here into the city. But being a company that operates at such a scale, do you feel a need or a desire to focus some of your work towards philanthropy in the city of Louisville, where you started out, or are you trying to spread it all around?
So we've done a ton of that over the years. And I was very, very involved in the community. I was very much involved in boards. I served as a trustee for, University of Louisville, Jewish Hospital. I was the chairman of GLI. I mean, the list goes on and on, and I think that's great. That's partially very much important to a success of a city and a region. My whole thing is we've got to have other talent come in. You see the mayors around the rest of the country now reaching out saying, we want to house your tech and your new startups. We want to house your massively growing later stage business. We'll give you all the incentives we can give you. Everybody went after Amazon, right? And that was kind of like, our bid was whatever. I didn't really see it. But we had no shot at getting that. We've got to focus on things we can get and start somewhere.
Yeah, no, that I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, you've been a proponent for growing Louisville for a while. I am kind of curious, just in my own interest, what was your involvement like in 2001 with the NBA efforts regarding the Hornets and Grizzlies? Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about your role and why it failed being so close to the finish line?
I was more behind the scenes than that. My brother led that at least back then, but I think again it was. We had some great corporate leadership with Yum and other people. The dollars were there. I think from the collection, it's been a long time. The owners wanted to come, but we just couldn't get our act together from a city standpoint. There was a lot of infighting. And cities can't be divided when they're going after something like that. And that was a monumental change for the course of the city as far as the history of what could have happened. I mean, if you look at Oklahoma City and you look at Memphis now and you look at the teams that have gone now from being a $180 million valuation to $3 billion. Think about that. In that short period of time, there's been no investment that could have done that basically in any professional sports other than maybe the NFL. And, of course, that wasn't something attainable at all. And so that was a monumental crossroads for our city, in addition to not having the ability to get University of Louisville on board. And we needed a governor to force the ability for the revenue share of that deal for the arena to be basically weighted toward the NBA team, and it just wasn't going to happen at that point. You know, everyone thinks there may be a chance to do it today. I don't know. We'll have to see. But I can tell you it would have been a lot easier to get it done back then with the cost and everything else. Now the cost has gone up 10 times. The expansion teams are 50 times higher now for a cost, so it's going to be very hard. But I guess unification is the key. Memphis has a team, as you know. Charlotte has a team. All of these teams have been very successful financially, and the fan base is ecstatic, and they've also landed companies because of it. And that's really the byproduct, right? The youth and the companies. I mean, you go to Beale Street, you go to Nashville. I mean, there's so much activity because of the pro sports on those streets, and now all of the bars and restaurants around there and the entertainment districts have just flourished.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, and that's kind of the issue that, you know, we're running into now. Not only is it more expensive and there's fewer owners that we can get, it's also the fact that people weren't really sold on having, you know, a professional team back in the 2000s. You know, they were looking to move to cities because not everybody necessarily wanted an NBA team, and now everybody wants one, and they see the business impact of having one. Do you think Louisville needs to garner more national attention to develop? So do you think that Bourbon and maybe just something is that I think is monumental, the NWSL with our women's soccer team, do you think that's enough, or do you think Louisville needs to be looking for something bigger to kind of latch on to help continue to grow?
Listen, I'm all for the soccer teams. I think it's the highest level of the league, right? It's still a minor league team, right, in two different ways.
The NWSL is tier one.
Yeah, absolutely, for women, yes. The men's, though, still tier two or tier yes. three, however it's classified. But look, I mean, it's not covered on ESPN, right? And mm-hmm. The bottom line is I'm taking nothing away from the athletes or the ownership and the effort, so I don't want to sound like that. But, you know, you've got to – I've always said this from my benchmark years ago. You've got to be on the weather map on national youth news. And Louisville isn't on the weather map. Actually, Lexington sometimes even shows up instead of Louisville, and it's, as you know, half the size. And so being on the weather map is because you have pro sports. And, again, it may be too late for us because, you know, the expansion costs now are so high, it's out of reach. And we don't have that kind of resources in our markets to bring those type of teams. But who knows? Maybe we'll find somebody. But I will tell you that, again, the time is maybe coming past due to the elevation of the valuation.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, the increase in valuations over the last couple decades, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming. But moving on to another feature that I think really sets a little apart, like a standout, it's one of my favorite places to go, and that's the waterfront park and the Great Lawn. And we know that you and maybe your family have had some involvement in getting that development to where it is. And I wanted you to maybe shed some light on that and maybe discuss any future plans that you think could enhance that area as you see it.
We were just part of a sale that helped, you know, develop that. I mean, again, the city was behind that effort. It's beautiful down there. I think it's great. I mean, again, I think there's got to be more is more, so to speak. We've got to have more effort to do all that. You know, Nulu got going pretty well, and then it's kind of been derailed by some of the things that have happened downtown. But I do believe that you've got to continually try to push for more happenings and more things going on. I mean, we've got a nice hotel push that's happened downtown. But, you know, again, we're probably in the second or third inning of where we need to be as far as really having a full-scale overhaul of our entire urban core.
Yeah, I agree almost completely with that. We're starting to wrap up here a little bit. We have two final questions. Do you have a holding in your current portfolio or any projects that you're currently working on that you'd like to promote? We'd like to give all of our guests that opportunity.
Well, I don't know if you saw, you know, we were the majority shareholder of Liquor Barn and Party mm-hmm. Mart and Depp's. We were the largest independent chain in Kentucky. And in a very cool way, we did a deal and sold it. We basically sold the company to a company called GoPuff, which is, there's no better and no more strategically aligned tech company in the country now. They're a tech company that does fulfillment. They're basically the next Amazon, except they own their inventory. And they're going to be bringing more jobs to Kentucky and throughout the country. And so it's kind of an amazing thing to have a retail business exit to a tech company, which is, I mean, almost never happens. So brick and mortar reversed the model and sold to a company that now is Tech, but also owns fulfillment centers. And so I think it's great that they chose Kentucky after California. BevMo was their first acquisition in this space. But to have them choose us after California really is a vote of confidence that it can be done in Kentucky and that, hey, we don't get left out all the time, if you know what I mean. So that's good. And then you may not know, we have a pretty big talent business in Beverly Hills that represents broadcasters, announcers, celebrity chefs, and everything else. And so that's been a very good business for us, which has also gotten some attention locally for us when we bring those people to town.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you guys can continue to see growth in that market. And honestly, back to the Liquor Barn, I mean, you love to hear things like that, like Kentucky getting any kind of recognition, you know. Before we can let you go, we do have one final question. We ask all our guests the same thing. If you had the power to change one policy here in Louisville, just kind of snap your fingers and make it happen, what would it be?
The one policy to change it in the city of Louisville?
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I have to think about it, but I guess right off the bat, I think we need to loosen the development restrictions. I think we have to, like other cities have done, streamline the development process and say, listen, we're not going to make it so hard. We don't want beautification to go away. I mean, I'm all for that, but it is just too difficult to get things done in our city. So whatever that thing has to do, that policy would be to change, that would be my answer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a question that always gets interesting takes, and I think that's the first time we've heard that, but I don't think I could agree more.
And we had Gil Holland on, and I think it was a similar vein of just trying to get a lot more brownfield development, get a lot more development in the urban core. And I think there's a lot of similarities there. So, but Jonathan, we definitely appreciate you hopping on. This has been a great interview.
Hey, thank you. Hope I was enlightening. And, you know, you've got my opinions. I'm pretty much, like I said, apolitical. I guess I'll just leave you with, I hope the next leader of the city, whoever that is progressive and pushes the envelope and make sure they have the, let's call it the police enforcement under their wing as far as making sure that they have a collaborative relationship. It's very, very important that they raise morale across that entire department and that we hopefully turn towards the future with a much brighter look than what we've been the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just one more time, we really want to thank you for coming on. It's been great getting to talk to you.
Thanks so much, guys. You guys take care.
Absolutely.
Take it easy.
Bye now.
We'll pick back up with our reaction segment after a word from our sponsor.
Well, Luke, that was another great interview. I think Jonathan Blue provides a lot of background, a lot of history with Louisville, but also a lot of really good insight into just the private equity and just the business community of Louisville and the area for that matter. What do you think of the interview?
Well, it was great. You know, I love all of our guests. I like to hear about the people that are making and improving Louisville. VC, anybody that's investing in startups, I like to hear about growing businesses. Thank Jonathan for coming out. And what in the interview stood out most to you?
Yeah, well, he said he specifically doesn't do startups, right?
Yeah, but you're right. Yeah.
He does late stage investment. I think that's an interesting development that I think we need a lot of that in this area, that there's just so many companies that have done that are doing really well. I don't know if you ever watched the TV show The Profit. I watched that a fair amount, at least the YouTube clips, where, you know, the main character of that show, he just goes in and finds companies and tries to, they may have an issue with production, they may have an issue with, you know, scale, they may have with distribution, whatever it might be, but they have like one or two small issues, and just an influx of cash will help them fix it and then grow. And it sounds like it's kind of what Jonathan's doing all the time.
Yeah. I got to tighten up the language, you know, language matters, but yeah, I guess I meant VC work, but no, you're right. He said he's focused on companies that were, you know, that had a stream of revenue, not pre-revenue startups, which is important. And you're right. When you have a company that could be optimized to improve their profit, improve their bottom line, their gross margins, then he's the type of guy that's going to come in, make the minor changes, provide a little oversight, provide a little insight, and hopefully bring them from you know, treading water to actually really succeed and take them to that next stage. And mm-hmm. and that is a super invaluable resource. It's something we love to have in the city.
Yeah, and I think it really parlays well into what he was talking about with needing to bring more outside investment and talent into like cultivation, right? So it's not just, I know a lot of the local media like promote a lot of local businesses, which is really important, but we need those companies to scale, or we need to have investment from outside places into these businesses so there's enough capital for them to scale at a fast pace. But you can't, the issue, right, as he mentioned, is the scale can't just be in Louisville, right? If you want to truly like take the next stage, it's got to be at minimum regional.
Yeah. We've talked about bringing in outside talent. It's easy to think we're talking about employees and attracting them, but like companies, bringing in outside companies, competing with our peer cities. As much as we talk about working alongside them, there is, you know, there are certain zero-sum games. Like a business can only have one headquarters, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you have to have that kind of dogged mentality to try and fight for new talent, for new businesses. And I mean, an example, I think we talked about on the podcast before, cities will often fight using tax incentives and whatever other opportunities and grants they have at their disposal to attract businesses. The example that, again, I think we mentioned is Kansas City, Kansas versus Kansas City, Missouri. And They have companies that straddle that state line. Mm-hmm. And this two competing cities will often offer different forms of tax incentives to drive companies across the border to try and reap the benefits and the revenue from each. Now, that particular situation might be a little suboptimal because we're talking about businesses moving like, you know, a block down the road. So like it's not employees aren't relocating necessarily with it. Mm-hmm. But in general, with a place like Louisville, I think we need to fight to try and attract as much talent as we can.
Well, I think what he kind of brought up too with the final question, right, is the change in development code kind of streamlined the access to capital. I think that's an interesting conversation. There was just an announcement in the Nulu area in Louisville that there's going to be a new hotel, right? And it's going to have a TIF. And I know TIFs are very controversial.
We've talked about what the
tax incentive financing district. So essentially they are, it's capped, but they don't have to pay taxes up to a certain amount based on the increased value of the property taxes.
Exactly.
And the rest goes back to the developer.
Yeah.
So, and I know those go back and forth about that. Obviously, I think one benefit is, you know, the value of the property is going to go way up for the foreseeable future. Even if the city doesn't make all the money on the front end, they'll get at least money on the back end. I still think they're going to probably take in more tax revenue even with the TIF than they would have it just being a parking lot before. But with that said, that's not why I brought that up. He's talking about streamlining the development code because, you know, you have things like Topgolf or things where they have so many sessions, so many hearings, and people will go and speak their voice. And I'm not sure that the public opinion matters on some of those zoning decisions anyways.
Yeah, some of these stakeholders feel unheard.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. And so my point is, even if you were to streamline that process and take away some of that public input as far as like those meetings go, I think that could be beneficial. But what I was talking about with the TIF in Nulu regarding that new hotel is Jigori Arthur, our local councilman, pushed for like the city's first community benefit agreement, right? So the hotel will have to have like certain like job fairs, certain training, certain outreach things for the community that are really important. And I think if we were to start incorporating more of those community development agreements or community benefit agreements, that could really help the development code stay prioritized to the needs of the community. But you could also cut back maybe some of the excessive meetings and things in the zoning code.
Yeah, absolutely. And without knowing the finite details of that specific agreement, I wonder about like the teeth and the enforcement of it. Like if the company doesn't hold up its end of the bargain, I doubt we're going to hold them severely accountable.
Yeah.
Honestly, you have to strike this balance of like needing them or requiring them to kind of engage with the community, provide these benefits, provide these jobs. And also you have to create an attractive place for a business to locate.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand that it's walking a tightrope, but I'm glad to see that we've got at least Jigori Arthur taking a lead and trying to push for initiatives like that.
Yeah.
But the other thing, and we hit on it so often,
wait, like maybe too much.
Yeah, it is the amenities, man. And it wasn't us this time. Jonathan Blue brought it up himself. He says that we need other amenities to bring and attract talent into young talent in particular into the city of Louisville. And obviously you guys know our opinion. We couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I think, pro sports, I'll push back a little bit. I do think the NWSL gets, good, decent treatment on ESPN and other things like that. So I do think the women's soccer team I think that was a monumental shift for the city because of the fact that it's the first tier one pro sports team since 1976 with the Kentucky Colonels.
I think it's the Bayern Munich women's team.
Yeah, it's the Women's Cup.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. Like that's going to be awesome. I'm excited to see something like that taking place in our city.
Yeah, where you have in Chicago and Louisville, and then two European clubs coming playing. I mean, that's unheard of, that we wouldn't have had any chance at without the NWSL here. So
yeah, and it's a beautiful stadium. It looks great.
But it goes back to okay, he's talking about how young professionals want amenities, and maybe that's why we talk about it, because we're both two young professionals. But I keep thinking like, okay, well, how quickly can we get the botanical gardens done? How quickly can we, try and make the city more walking friendly, try and make it to where young people want to live here. You want to have that urban density. You want to have walkability. You want to have businesses that young people want to get to, because that inevitably that's how you attract talent.
I mean, we talked about the waterfront and the Great Lawn, and honestly, those are some of the more beautiful parts of our city. I absolutely love them. I love the concerts that take place there. But, I'd like to see that same kind of beautification and like greening happening across the city, so there's more access to spaces like that.
Now, I do think with the expansion that's going to happen in New Albany in southern Indiana, they're talking about putting like an adventure park out there, and it's going to be a massive new park system in southern Indiana. And it will really, you could in theory, if you take the old K&I bridge, I believe on 19th Street, that I think it's still being used as a train bridge, but you could add pedestrian bridges on the sides. Other cities, I think Memphis has done it, to where you can still make it walkable on the sides. Mm-hmm. So the idea, you could have a full loop to the Big Four bridge and walk just nothing but parks on both sides. And that would be something that it would be an interstate almost agreement, to where you'd have two different states coming together to make this really unique and prosperous park development, that you've seen what's going on with Jeffersonville, Indiana, because of the Big Four bridge, right? That there's so much development there. If you have that in Nulu plus the West End combined, I mean, that would be an unbelievable boon for New Albany and West Louisville.
Yeah, and the proposed park you're talking about, it's massive, but it's really kind of still at the planning stages. They've got the idea laid out, but like I don't know if they may have parks already existing that are going to be added to the future development, but we haven't seen.
It's a large swath of land.
It's a huge swath of land, and if the end result looks anything like the proposal, it's going to be amazing for both Southern Indiana and Louisville. And I can't wait for that to take place. But, we got to see how it develops.
Yeah. But I think it's those types of kind of the loops, the high end amenities that could just provide so much benefit that it would blend in with our phase 4. So of the expansion of Waterfront Park to the West End, those types of developments, that's what really attracts people. You have to have things that almost knocks people's socks off when they come and see it. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I didn't find another place for it, but we do have to talk about our paper today.
Yeah.
So the paper for this week is titled Venture Capitalists and COVID-19. And really what it tries to do is, if you follow financial news like I do, anybody that was talking about the markets, and specifically the VC markets on the front end of the pandemic, was really worried that we were going to see a decrease in capital expenditures by VCs, that we were going to see less investments taking place. And so this paper tried to quantify what the current state of venture capitalism was in the wake of COVID. And they did this by sending out a survey study, which is not as good as having hard data, but survey, if that's what you got, that's what you got. But they sent it out to 1,000 different VC firms that represented almost a market share of the VC market. So these are some of the largest firms in the nation, and they also categorized them based on areas of the country that had bad COVID outbreaks versus ones that were experiencing, you know, less severe outbreaks. So they tried to distinguish whether or not that was a factor in any of their capital expenditure. But really, they just wanted to see what the overall performance was like in, you know, the middle of this pandemic. And luckily, and I think beating a lot of the expectations, if you were listening to the doomsayers on TV, it seems like most firms did pretty well during the pandemic. Overall confidence was exceedingly high. Like over 90% of the surveyed firms said that they expected to beat market average performance during 2021. And three quarters of them said that they thought that the entire VC market would beat the S&P during that same period. So confidence was high, exceedingly high within firms, and it was high for the entire VC market, like across the board. So it doesn't seem like confidence was affected. And I think the reason that people thought at the early stages that this might be a factor is one thing that venture capitalists bring to the table is kind of a hands-on approach. They want to get into the business and see how it's run and try and offer insight, improvement, streamlining, you know, optimization. And when you don't have physical access to some of these companies because of prohibitions by the COVID regulations, you know, and travel became like a real issue, then you're not going to be able to operate your business as you traditionally do. So I think people were really worried that that was going to affect the actual expenditure, cash expenditure, and the investments. But it just doesn't seem to be that was really the case. And going back to the teasing out like regional issues, like if there was an area that was specifically hard hit by COVID, that also didn't seem to have like a major effect on
the funds
on the funds, yeah, and VC performance. So like,
well, that's part of the reason that you have diversification with VC funds. But the other aspect of it that I think is just kind of apparent, right, is, you know, with COVID, you expected there to be a lot of hard hit impact in the business community. And there was for a period of time, but that was mostly a lot of companies just thinking that there was going to be a worse impact. And then they had the capital, they had the PPP loans, they had capital remaining, and now we're on a blitz, right? There's so much business development, there's so much real estate development going on right now because of the cash on hand that companies have had, because I think a lot of places just expected COVID to affect business worse than it did.
Yeah.
And now we're just on a blitz.
Yeah, it's honestly so hot. People are worrying now about like asset bubbles, but yeah. You know, that's not fair for this segment. Fair. But yeah, but we're absolutely on a tear. But I don't know. It's good to see the economy is at least in the general sense is doing pretty well, and especially the VC sectors. It seems to be relatively unaffected by what has been a terrible pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with that said, Luke, do you have anything else to add? I think that's a lot of really good insight. And I think the interview with Jonathan provided a lot of depth, a lot more of a historical aspect of Lowell than we normally necessarily get.
Yeah, no, I think that's it for me, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
As always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us on Building This Community. If you'd like any more information, you can follow us on Twitter at BuildingThisCom, C-O-M, or you can follow Andrew
at Andrew J. Klump, and you can also follow Luke
at LMP43. Definitely subscribe, and we look forward to talking to you guys next week.